Welcome to Packet Pushers Unplugged, a podcast on the wireless networking, where real people discuss events, technology and work life in wireless networking. That's why we call it Unplugged. We gather articles and ideas and then we get together to flap our chins about them. Get comfortable while we get the survey kit out, sit on top of a building with a cup of coffee and chat with humour, wit and maybe even some technical talent. And speaking of talent, Jennifer is back again this week. How are you going, Jennifer?
I am. I'm doing good. I'm cookie baking marathon. I'm done for the year.
Cookie baking. Why? My girls can make cookies in 20 minutes.
Oh, these are special cookies. They take like all day.
Too much for me.
It is. It's too much for me too. Once a year, that's it.
My maximum distance for cooking food's about 4 hours, and that's when I make bagels and bread. And after that, I'm like, well, any longer than that, I'm out. Uh-huh. And also with us this week is Andrew von Nagy. Andrew, how are you this week?
Doing good. On vacation through Christmas, so got a little time off. Going to do some home tech support and get rocking with the family. So.
And also returning this week is Chris Little. How are you, Chris?
I'm doing good. I'm at home this week for a change and able to get caught up on my life.
When did you move to America? You're obviously, because you're a New Zealander, you've obviously been there for a while, or did you recently move?
Yep. Yeah, I've been here for 14 years.
Yeah. And you haven't lost your accent. Like, you sound to me like you just left yesterday.
Exactly, and I'm very happy about that too.
There you go. Well, let's push on with the show. It's our pre-Christmas special, and I'm rushing to get this one out the door, so we'll just hammer through as quickly as we can. This week, we were talking a bit about, obviously iPads changing the way things are working and the plethora of wireless devices coming into the market. And we're seeing a lot more 802.11n arrive in the enterprise. So what's going to happen to 802.11 when that starts to, you know, what is it going to do to 802.11 in the enterprise networks?
So I've seen with this customer that I've been, the iPads are having a significant effect not only on their wireless networks, but additionally on that there's a visibility up in the executive spheres that's going, we've got to have a wireless network that actually works well. And that's in turn calling, of course, for more of my services, which I'm very happy about. But I was amazed at the effect of the iPad in the enterprise and at how that's actually driven a lot of people to really go, we've got to get on 802.11n to deal with this.
I also think iPhones are doing it as well, because we're
just the prevalence of all of the iDevices that are now in the enterprise. It's really causing people to have to reevaluate their wireless network and their DHCP scopes just at the bare minimum.
Well, yeah, because when you're paying for your data on your 3G plan and you've only got a finite amount of data and you're on a corporate plan, that can change the way your use. You've got a new cost vector that actually impacts adopting wireless in the office.
Or if you're on Verizon and using the new LTE, you can use up your monthly allotment very, very quick.
Yeah, we did they're doing some proof of concept work at the job I've just left around iPads and iPhones. And I think you're right. I think the iPad doesn't necessarily mean that enterprise is going to adopt the iPad, but it does drive some perceptions that tablets are going to be part of the future, I think.
I think of the several wireless vendors that we work with, we've had several of them come out with papers specifically to saying, okay, we're hearing all of these enterprises getting us, asking us how to deal with the influx of iPads and wireless devices driven by all of the iType devices. And they bring out specific papers on how to optimize the wireless network for dealing with that.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing is that mobility is no longer confined to the type scenario. We're seeing mobility being driven into everyday enterprise employees who just need to, you know, do their day-to-day work on a thin client or tablet, and in a lot of cases these are consumer devices now that may not have enterprise class features. And so we're seeing the definite shift on enterprise wireless from designing for coverage to designing for capacity.
Very much so.
Because most of the 802.11, you know, the 2.4 gigahertz spectrum, so heavily loaded, it doesn't work so very well.
No.
Yes. And I think the iPad in particular, I mean, I know the iPhone only supported the 2.4 gigahertz, but I think the iPad in particular supports 5 gigahertz, so it makes it much more usable. I mean, the particular quote that I had that really surprised me from an executive was that he told me that all of the executives at the latest shareholder meeting were handing out iPads to the people coming to the shareholders meeting, and that they had this expectation of being able to walk across the entire campus and be able to stay connected with their iPads as they were doing that.
I think that's a carryover of everybody having some sort of cell device that just basically works almost everywhere. So they're expecting the wireless to be the same.
Right.
Yeah, and that brings in some unique challenges, especially once you look at 5 gigahertz support on consumer devices. I mean, you've got a lot of different frequencies and channels to choose from, and not every device is going to support every one of those channels. So you got to be very careful about architecting to the lowest common denominator of what you're going to support.
I think people expect to be connected everywhere, because my iPhone supports 5.5 gig as well as 2.4.
Oh. And because you've got an iPhone 4?
Yeah, so I run a 5 gig network in my house. In fact, I run both a 2.4 and a 5, and everything I own from Apple supports both.
Wow.
Yeah, but I think even within the 5 gigahertz, I mean, just blatantly saying it, something supports 5 gigahertz is pretty a broad statement, because I think I've seen quite a mix of devices out there that may support either the lower Uni 1 and higher Uni 3 bands, but not the Uni 2 and 5 gigahertz. So when you're looking at a multiple access point enterprise deployment, you got to be careful with some of the access points, you know. Don't sit on channels that maybe not all the clients support.
Yeah, like the newer uni rates that were made available. Not every device can understand them.
Yeah, which also brings up another point that Andrew made recently, which is client devices that supposedly support 802.11n aren't always the same.
No.
Well, that's the advantage of the iPad, of course, is that it's a single device, a single manufacturer, a single operating system, and it actually is going to have more rapid exception into the enterprise, because it's one device. And it actually comes with an enterprise toolkit, which actually controls it quite tightly. It actually sort of maps into the Windows tool sets. And I think it's going to see much better adoption in the enterprise at the moment than Android, because Android's such a wide spectrum of devices. So if you go off and buy a Cisco Cius today, then somebody's going to rock up with another Android tablet, and they're going to go, oh, look, I've got the Samsung Galaxy tablet, and then someone's going to turn up with another one, and that's going to be a real headache for IT support, whereas the iPad's going to have a very rigidly controlled one-year time frame, and you know that its wireless is going to act a certain way, whatever it is, and you can configure the network for it. And I believe that the iPad's going to be more successful in the enterprise than people believe, because it's not open, because it's not Microsoft Windows, and you don't have to find a whole bunch of tools to make it fit.
I think I would agree to a certain point. I think one of the big call-outs that's going to be that IT departments are going to struggle with is mobile device management and security. I think internally we've been kicking around, you know, what it needs to be able to support an iPad from either an internal or a hotspot type of scenario. And when you get down to the nuts and bolts of it, there aren't a lot of great mobile device management suites out there that and security aspects to lock down these iPad and iPhone type devices to where you're comfortable putting corporate data storage on the device and things like that. So I think a lot of the challenge is going to be policy and security driven rather than architecting to, you know, get them connectivity on the wireless network.
And if you looked also at Apple's toolkits for managing the iDevices?
Yes.
Yeah. I think you get into some complexities, especially when you get into large enterprises where they're looking at supporting more than just the iPad. So, you know, companies may not be looking for a point solution for individual devices. They're looking for more of a management suite for a large amount of consumer devices. Right. And so you get into complexities with that. You don't want a separate tool to manage iPads versus Androids versus, Palm
iPhones,
or something like that.
And BlackBerry has set the bar for management of devices. So companies, companies are going to pick a vendor of Android devices, you know, HTC or so-and-so, and they're going to want to have one operating system for phones and tablets as well. And no other vendor is currently producing a uniform product, I think, for that. So we'll have to wait and see. But I think perhaps the point is that as we see more 802 Wi-Fi-enabled devices, we're going to see the 2.4 gig spectrum degrade further, which will probably drive enterprise more into 802.11n, more hotspots, more networks. Is that the point?
802.11n and 5 gigahertz, yes. I think we're going to see more and more adoption of even of consumer devices there, but as 2.4 becomes more saturated. Interestingly, I've seen that even the 5 gigahertz, there's some weird devices out there that interfere. Like one weird one I encountered recently was 5 gigahertz cameras.
I haven't come across that yet. Usually the fixed frequency devices that I see when I do a spectrum analysis are in the 2.4, and I can't ever figure out what they are. I don't know if it's machinery, because it's not identified by the Cisco Spectrum Expert.
This was specifically because I was working on a movie lot, and it was very costly movie camera that used 5 gigahertz.
Interesting. Yeah, I think as more and more people have rovers and cradle points and all of the little personal Wi-Fi gadgets in their back pocket, and they disregard the guest networks that are available, I think you're going to see the 2.4 is just going to be basically unusable, because everybody and their brother is going to have their own little 2.4 hotspot. What channel it defaults to is anybody's guess.
It seems to be two mindsets to those types of devices. There's one where the enterprise is going, we're going to treat this like a rogue device, and then the other one where, well, we can't stop them from coming in, but we're just going to have to kind of have a system that deals with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think what we've been seeing is that providing a sanctioned guest network and advertising it and you know, getting it known out there from your guests that are coming into the enterprise, you know, to make sure that they know that that's available and that's a better alternative for them, and really getting support for it through your employees to sponsor the guests or contractors as they come in, really goes a long way to helping minimize as much of that as possible.
Have you seen any of the, if I go onto the guest network, I get restricted to this, so yep. Because I can't do that, I'm going to use my own hotspot device.
Yeah, I've seen that.
That's unfortunate. I mean, you're there to, you know, really achieve business goals, and bringing in a contractor or a guest, I mean, they're really there to help your company serve you know, an ultimate purpose. And I mean, besides restricting them from illegal content or maybe some of the inappropriate content, my feeling is that those hotspot networks should be fairly well open. I mean, as long as they don't have access to corporate data, you know, you're segmenting them off of your network. What's the deal?
Legal liability.
Yeah.
Yep.
You're legally liable for things that happen on that network. So if somebody spawns a BitTorrent client and starts downloading something, and then your company can potentially be exposed. And then to absolve yourself from that, you have to put in a very expensive logging system to log every user and what they saw, and that gets to be a bit of a challenge. So, when I'm on site now, I tend to carry my 3G broadband modem, Wi-Fi 3G broadband modem, because it's often better performing than the guest Wi-Fi, because the guest Wi-Fi is heavily overloaded. I think enterprises have to shift the perception of guest Wi-Fi as a that'll do or near enough, to something that's actually serious, because consultants now who come in from the outside, and they're often very expensive, you know, thousands of dollars a day, or doing very specialized niche tasks, and they're only going to be there for a very short period of time. And if the guest wireless goes out and it's only on an 8x5 next business day maintenance program, you've got a major cost factor, and the noise that happens now when it goes out is pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, typically what we've seen a lot of use of is just corporate VPN stuff going out through guest wireless. I mean, we see, you know, the typical web browsing and stuff. We haven't run into a lot of misuse of our guest wireless, though, with BitTorrent or anything like that. I mean,
I think you would if you had an area where people could dawdle or sit and like tuck away and like look like they were doing some real work, but they weren't. Because I see that in coffee shops around here all the time. Anything that lends itself to lingering, you would see more of that.
Yeah, I wonder if it's a difference between cafe public type hotspots and kind of corporate guest hotspots where they're actually there, you know, meeting with employees and doing work.
Yeah.
I've seen it plenty of times.
Yeah, I think so too.
I've seen it on corporate networks just as often as I've seen it anywhere else. It's been a problem sometimes. Sometimes we put sniffers on and run around and warn everybody. That's been a thing.
And they always look surprised too when you catch them.
Oh, that's right. They always bluster a bit first. Okay, now you've also listed a topic here about fast roaming and why it's important to the enterprise. Andrew, why don't you tell us more about that topic?
Yeah, so I think one of the kind of items or topics for corporate Wi-Fi or enterprise-grade Wi-Fi that's kind of gotten swept under the rug the last 2 years is really roaming performance. And that's unfortunate, because as we see more and more client devices coming out, just like we're talking with iPads and Androids and consumer devices, in an enterprise-class environment where we've deployed WPA or WPA2 security with 802.1x and EAP authentication, roaming performance has become a big challenge. In the old days of wireless, you had either open or WEP, and there really wasn't an authentication component. And so roaming was fairly quick, and that's one of the key performance metrics for wireless networks, is how the clients roam when they move between access points and how quickly they can get their data session moved from one to the other. Just kind of like an analogy with a cell tower network, how you quickly move from one cell tower to another. And fast roaming is a big component of that for wireless networks.
It kind of makes me wonder if, the flavor that most of the larger enterprise wireless vendors has been going through most lately has been spectrum analysis. I wonder if it's going to become the flavor of the month as problem becomes more and more prevalent, that they're going to go, okay, we've got to bring out some tools now to help at an enterprise level manage roaming across the network and get more metrics from it.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's one of those things where historically diagnosing roaming performance of clients is number one, very client dependent. So it varies between clients and their firmware and drivers. And the second is it's very hard to figure out exactly what that performance is. You usually have to take a packet sniffer and run a simultaneous capture on three different channels, monitoring a couple different access points, and actually run a client through its paces going between access points to figure out how fast it's getting between access points. And so typically it's been pretty cumbersome and complex to diagnose some of that roaming performance.
Yeah, totally agree there. I found it very interesting that Air Magnet included that in their latest release, that they found it as being something very important to focus on there.
Yeah, I'm excited for this coming year. I think, the 802.11r amendment has been out since 2008, and we really haven't seen much traction from either enterprise Wi-Fi vendors or client manufacturers to adopt support for fast roaming. And that's unfortunate, because I think that's one of the biggest things that can degrade the performance of and the user experience on a wireless network. I think I heard from Aerohive recently that there's going to be a spun up working session with some vendors and some clients come spring of next year, where they're going to start sitting down to hammer this out from a Wi-Fi Alliance perspective to get this going. So hopefully that's good news for next year.
Yeah, I really hope that they get underway with the Voice Enterprise certification, because that will help drive this a lot and provide a much more interest in actually coming to some sort of agreement with it.
Are people really using voice over wireless? Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a lot.
Oh, yes. There's lots of different voice over wireless devices. There's the Vocera badges, there's Cisco phones, there's Spectralink phones. I mean, there's all kinds of voice over wireless devices, and each one has its own nerd knob that needs to be tweaked and tuned and must be set just so, and is looking for a cell coverage edge at X, and this other one wants it at Y. And
yeah,
it's very, very sensitive.
A huge announcement was just made, I believe, either last week or 2 weeks ago by Home Depot. They just rolled out a $64 million program to equip all of their employees with multifunction, I believe, Motorola devices, where they do inventory scanning, location tracking, and part of that component is mobile voice.
But let me be a little cynical there for a minute and say, sure, retail is a good application for wireless. So those stores, because the stores keep re-architecting themselves, they don't want to put cabling in for phones and equipping the staff with, voice handsets and all that sort of stuff. That's kind of an obvious, but that's a niche market. The retail market's a big marketplace, but that doesn't include, every company in the world is suddenly going to start using wireless phones. I think most companies are just switching to mobile phones instead of wireless handsets.
It could be. I mean, there's a lot of healthcare deployments that use the little Vocera badges because they're hands-free. The staff can keep doing whatever they're doing and place a call or receive a call from whoever. Mm. So that's also another niche,
Yeah, I think we're looking at expense reduction as well. I mean, Cisco just announced that partnership for UMA with T-Mobile to offload cellular expenses when employees are in a corporate environment. I mean, the whole fixed mobile convergence has kind of been sitting out there, but hasn't really been a big driver except for very point solutions. I think as more and more companies are getting away from desk phones or old analog phones, I think, or even digital phones, and they move to voice over IP, with smartphones like you said, Greg, becoming more prevalent, I think we're going to see dual access or dual mode cell phones with both Wi-Fi and cellular become more prevalent as well.
And then hopefully there'll be white papers on what the sensitivity is of an iPhone versus a BlackBerry and how you tune your network for that instead of a Vocera.
Big hope.
Well, I've always questioned. I mean, Cisco let Apple have the word iOS for their operating system. And or at least it appears that some deal was done. And I've always speculated that Cisco's got something going on to put a program onto the iPhone, some preferential status, and a voice client on the iPhone that connects over Wi-Fi is the natural extension, I would have thought.
Hmm.
There's already one available.
Yep.
It's in the App Store today. I was just looking at it last week and talking with some internal folks about potentially spinning up some testing around that.
Makes sense. You know, if you've got an iPhone, you just... when you're in the office, you have and now that you've got the background processing, you can just leave it on all the time.
Is that a dual mode one, or is it just a this one operates over Wi-Fi and you use the normal phone for your...
This was just an application that ran over Wi-Fi.
Okay.
Yeah. The iPhone 4 definitely does 2.4 and 5. So it could do both. So I guess the application would just be configured into, you know, the handset configuration would be in some way, say, when you're within this wireless range, this becomes a handset and reports to the system, registers with the system. But the carriers have solutions for this for very big companies. They ALA to create private networks, private telephone networks over the 3G. Just hasn't been very successful in America. It's been quite successful in Europe, where companies can actually go to the carrier and actually have a private mobile phone network inside of the 3G network of the company. So, for example, in the UK, we can buy APNs. And for the classic case that I know is that, for example, Coca-Cola, and every Coca-Cola machine in the UK has a 3G uplink. So when it needs more Coke or has full of money or has no change or, you know, being vandalized, it throws out a 3G signal. But that doesn't go on to the general 3G network. It goes onto a private 3G data network and goes directly back to head office.
Well, the one of the problems with that, I was discussing this with Rocky as well, is that most of the phone networks in the US up until recently have not had full coverage for the spectrums that they're using across the entire US. And they've had various pockets of allocation everywhere. And it wasn't really until the 700 megahertz auction that came up recently that it got to be a possibility that they could buy chunks of spectrum across the whole country.
Yes.
So that's probably what's driven it. I think in Europe it seemed to me that there's much more able to say, I've got this one spectrum across the whole of Europe and I'm able to develop the service across the whole of that region, whereas you couldn't do that in the US.
Well, there was a deliberate move by governments in Europe to ensure that there was good competition, so no one company could monopolize a frequency range. So when they allocated the spectrum covered the entire country, and then they broke it up into pieces and said there's three or four or five. So in the UK, there's five companies with 3G spectrum. When they got the spectrum, they got the entire country. So when you won the 800, you got everything in the country. Whereas in America, you bid for each part. And they thought that it would be better to have competition by saying people in San Francisco, there's a company in San Francisco and there's a company in New York, and they wouldn't be the same company. They didn't imagine that you'd want one mobile. They just wanted to let... It's one of those things that needs regulation. You want just one company across the entire country. And so part of the challenge that AT&T's got is they've got no spectrum in San Francisco, and worse, San Francisco is a haven of green hippies who don't want to put towers up. So they've got very limited amounts of spectrum, and nobody wants a mobile phone tower in their back garden. And where's there's more iPhones per square inch is in San Francisco, so they're going to have bad coverage. I mean, that's not to say that AT&T is not a bad, you know, not a bad network. I mean, I don't know one way or the other, but I do know that they have distinct challenges just around the wireless spectrum.
Yeah, and it's interesting to parallel what the FCC has done versus what the European Union countries have done, because the FCC is taking completely different approaches, and you can see that in multiple different industries. Like, you see it in the cellular industry, but you also see it in mobile or in broadband internet access in the U.S. where for all intents and purposes there's really a lack of competition in quite a few markets.
So in Europe we've taken the view that the copper belongs to the people, So all the copper that's in the ground is shared between all the carriers, and they can all... And even if you do own copper in the ground, you have to rent it out to other companies. So what does that mean in my house? I've only got one company providing copper into my house, but I can buy anything from 30 different companies who provide internet access.
Yeah, whereas in the U.S., I'm tied, for instance, to Comcast, and I can't get away from them. There's nothing I can do.
Yeah, you've got no choice. Isn't it? Then that's a fantastic benefit of capitalism, I think.
Yeah.
Sorry, was I being sarcastic again? I should stop that.
Monopolism.
Okay. So
mock the U.S., maybe they'll change.
No, it's an interesting one, because in Australia I also saw something similar where there was a monopoly carrier who owned all the copper, and the government said, well, we need to have some competition. But there's no competition while the monopoly person owns the copper in the ground, because you can't bury the copper. It cost... You know, the Australian government effectively paid for the copper to be put in the ground over the last 75 years.
Yeah, it's interesting. The U.S. has gone about that on technology-based, you know, initiatives. Like the whole telecom industry in the U.S. was originally privately owned by AT&T, and then it got, you know, broken up by the monopoly, and you got
your broken up into regionals. And what they should have done is actually said the copper. They made a decision to go into regional things to break the monopoly power of AT&T. But they talked for a long time prior to that about saying all the copper belongs in one company, and then everybody competes to share the copper. But they went a different way because, well, who knows why? I don't remember. So Keith R. Parsons, who's the host of the Wireless LAN Professionals podcast, has recently announced that he's moving to Ruckus after years of being a self-employed consultant. Is that a big thing? I've got the opinion that it is.
He seems to be excited about the new opportunity. I'm not sure. I don't really know what his day-to-day is going to be, you know, from his previous employment to working with Ruckus. I don't know if he'll still be traveling and teaching or what. I kind of sent him an email to ask, you know, what that's all going to be like.
I hope he keeps up with the podcast.
Yeah.
I said he was going to.
Yeah, the only thing I saw was that he was going to be expert services, which... sounds like they're building out the support organization. You know, I viewed it as similar to some of the other things like Devin Aiken going to Aerohive and that kind of thing as being just a really good support of professionals who've been around for a long time in the industry and saying, hey, we've got to make room for these people and give them something that's actually going to help keep them going.
Yeah, and the other part that kind of sounded interesting to me was that I don't know if this is part of Keith's motivation or not. I haven't really talked to him, but from my point of view, it would be interesting to, you know, be a influencer in the future direction of a company and where the market's going, rather than being a consultant kind of after the fact helping companies implement said technology.
Hmm. Well, they had GT Hill working for Ruckus already, so I'm just seeing it as another add to the level of professionalism that they already have within that company, which makes them, to me, a very interesting company.
Well, that's it for the show this week, and thanks for listening to Packet Pushers Unplugged. It's Christmas, so the best of the holidays to you all. Hope you have a good time with your families. We'll probably be putting out some more shows in the new year, so make sure you come back. I'd like to thank Jennifer for joining us on the show this week. What are you going to be doing for Christmas?
I'm wrapping up all of the cookies that I just baked and shipping them out to the four corners of the universe.
Is that some weird American custom?
No, it's just the only thing I do for the holidays. That's it. You either get some of my cookies or you get bupkis. You get nothing.
Looks like I'm getting bupkis.
That's all I do.
And Andrew, what are you doing this weekend for Christmas?
I'm on vacation. I'm just going to be relaxing with the family and doing some one tech support line item wrapped already in the pipeline here to replace the wireless network at my in-laws. So be having fun with that.
Okay. And where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter on @ Revolution Wi-Fi or my blog at revolutionwifi.blogspot.com.
Thank you. And Chris, what are you doing for the new year?
Well, I'm going to be basically catching up on all of the interesting things that have been released from the various vendors that I work with and various other little projects that I've had lined up for some time that I haven't been able to get to. So as a usual techie Christmas and New Year's for me. You can find me on Twitter at Wi-Fi Kiwi or wifikiwi.com.
Brilliant. And you can find Jennifer on Skype at Jennifer Lucille.
I actually just, I have the, it's easier for it everybody to just find me at jenniferlucille.com. It just auto resolves to my blogspot, which I think is jenniferhuber.blogspot. I'm not sure.
And tell me what's happening with the Tech Field Day next year. How's the plans for that coming along?
The plans for that are coming along good. We've got, I think we've got two or three vendors that have already signed up, working the rest of them, twisting arms and expressing we have lots of great delegates that are going to be there, and that the vendors should really be there. They're missing out.
And I'm great. You can find me at etherealmind.com or on Twitter as @etherealmind. Please leave your feedback on today's show or send an email to packetpushers@gmail.com and let us know what you're thinking. Check out the website at packetpushers.net and comment on today's show, or follow us on Twitter at @packetpushers. And remember, too much networking would never